You're listening to the Bearded Theologians podcast, hosted by Zach Bechtold and Matt Franks. If you'd like to learn more about the Bearded Theologians, you can go online at beardedtheologians.com, where we have past podcasts, blogs, and a couple of items for sale. So check us out, beardedtheologians.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy this week's show.
One of the nice things about live shows, you're here with the Bearded Theologians. I'm Matt Franks.
And I'm Zach Bechtold. And we are here with the Podcast-a-thon. And we're so excited to be live with you. And we have a very special guest with us. We have our very own Bishop Karen Olivito with us. And Bishop Karen, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, friends. Great to be with you.
Of course. And just as all of the other podcasts that have gone live with us through the Podcast-a-thon, we're going to be talking discipleship making and discipleship. And gosh, we just wanted to get Bishop Karen here with us to chat about what discipleship making looks like in today's age and with what we're dealing with coming out of COVID and what the church looks like today and all of the things. And so that's kind of where we want to start with. Again, Bishop Karen, thank you for being here. And how are you, as a bishop, experiencing and seeing discipleship making happen?
Well, I think it's something we need to do more of. I think, you know, coming out of COVID, kind of the divisions we've experienced in church and society, we're holding a lot of trauma and needing to do some healing of ourselves. But part of that is how we walk in the world as disciples of Jesus Christ. So how are our churches giving each other the resources we need to bear witness to God's love in a very hurting and broken world?
Absolutely. And that's something that I saw, I think really COVID brought out to the forefront, is that our ways of making disciples, or even our attention to the detail of making disciples, might not have been quite where we wanted it to be or thought it was, because we saw I just think it exposed a lot of gaps that we had.
You're right. I mean, it showed the gaps that we haven't nurtured people who can think theologically as they make decisions in these anxious times. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we saw it when we needed to mask, when we needed to close our buildings, not close our church, but close our buildings. People couldn't think theologically about why that was a faithful response as disciples of Jesus.
Right. And even coming back, having the conversation with colleagues all across the connection, you know, a lot of the conversation was, gosh, are people not coming back? What are you seeing in your area? And with a couple of individuals, the conversation was, well, gosh, you know, they got out of the habit. And, you know, it hit me really hard of, we're not in the business of making habit. We're in the business of making disciples. And those are two very different things. And for me, that's what the last few years have been about, is highlighting that difference. And no, I'm not a habit maker. We're disciple makers, and we got to do that better and more intentional.
Well, and I think that's why language is important. The language that I would use around during COVID was, we're not closed, we're just operating differently. I actually refused to use the word closed because we weren't closed. Right. I mean, I was working, you know, 300 times more, having to edit videos and going and collecting videos and all those fun things. And I think that our language of making disciples is important. How, like, answering that question, how are we going to do that as we're coming out of this season that we've been in? And I really like last week at Clergy Orders, Bishop, how you talked about the idea of bringing joy back in. Because mm-hmm. We came out of this and we came back into our spaces. And while there was a little bit of joy of being together, there was also still that, like, I almost felt like it was a lull. Just a sense of not only just disconnect, but just a sense of just a sadness. And you also pointed out last week the sense of how that, when that creativity is lost, when we're in that low moment. I kind of gathered from that, that like, we need to go back to having fun again. And you definitely unpacked that for us. And would you mind kind of talking a little bit about having fun?
Sure. Well, first let's back up. I do believe that people who've experienced trauma, people who are oppressed or marginalized, the first thing robbed is imagination and creativity. It's gone because you're in survival mode. And so part of the healing work we have to do with one another is to learn how to play. There is joy in the gospel of Jesus Christ. It should undergird everything we do. It doesn't mean we're not going to have a hard time. It doesn't mean we're going to be happy all the time. But it does mean we're going to have this joy that does give us the strength to push through. And, I watched other denominations when they brought their clergy together, when they brought their bishops together, and for the first time post-COVID, they played together. They went kayaking. They played pickleball, and we United Methodists, do all the good you can in all the ways you can. And all. It's time to get down to work. Let's not trifle away time. But if we don't take the time to play, to regain joy, we can't be creative. And this moment demands creativity as we help people go deeper in their discipleship and in our witness as a church. If we, Matt, you're so right. I got so many angry letters during COVID. You closed my church. I said, no. Your building might be closed, but actually your church has never had a greater witness. You're doing evangelism in ways you never have. You're worshiping with people a half a world away. Mm-hmm. You're bringing in people who actually your building was a hindrance because they were afraid to cross the threshold.
Right.
And without bringing joy into this moment, we can't think of how to integrate what we've learned in COVID and let something new emerge that I think the Holy Spirit is asking us to give birth to.
I think you're exactly right. I mean, we do. Methodists do a really good job of not trifling away time most of the time. But we take ourselves too dang seriously sometimes. And right, we forget to play. We forget to play just in worship and have fun. And, have a little bit of grace as we're going through this process of just gathering together and worshiping together and truly trying to figure out what that looks like today. And when we talk about discipleship, since the beginning of time, I'm sure we've all had some version of some kind of discipleship pathway. And, often in a circle or, in some form of linear fashion, I guess. But I hope that we can just break those apart and find ways to, because I don't know that I've ever seen any discipleship pathway or any method of discipleship include play. Why can't laughter be a part of that? Why can't that be an entry point, right? And we're seeing that really big push in a lot of areas through fresh expressions and just being in our communities, mm-hmm. and finding ways to be present, not only as pastors and as the church and as lay people, but just as people. I kind of think just as people, we have forgotten how to play a little bit. And that makes the rest of life hard. And that certainly makes faith and spirituality hard if we only see it as the Sunday morning thing or the we have to go and just sit and listen thing or the occasional mission project. Those are all really important things. But how do we interject the fun and joy and hope back into those?
As you were talking and I thought about laughter, I thought about, some of my favorite memories of church as a teen was sitting in the high school choir and, in the alto section and Kathy Cenobar sitting next to me. And we get to a hymn like, Raise My Ebenezer. And we start to chuckle. And then we start to like try to hold it in and we're both having these belly laughs. It was a whole body experience in which I felt closer to God then, it made me understand that this gospel that Jesus invites us to follow is a full bodied. It's an embodied way of life. And that laughter can bring us closer to one another and to God.
Good.
So, you know, I always try to start the year with like a new word or something, you know, just to kind of keep me centered, a little bit focused. And this year my word is renewed. And when I shared it with my congregation, the idea is to be renewed, to live like Jesus, renewed to serve like Jesus, and renewed to have fun like Jesus. And I've been trying to be a little bit more intentional on having fun. I don't know why that's, in some ways, that's a little bit hard for me because we've just been trained to be so serious that heaven forbid we actually do try to crack a joke in the sermon or, you know, in a meeting or, you know, creating a space where that creativity or laughter can happen. And, you know, I think it's one of those things that if we would incorporate it into our daily lives and practices and acknowledge it, that laughter is really a great medicine to help us grow in our faith. And I think it can break down some of those tension barriers that happen when you walk into the church for the first time. If you're a new guest, you know, if you walked in and everybody's joyful in the narthex, that changes the atmosphere so much better than if everybody's just like, when you walk in, they just stare at you like, you know, what are you doing here? Like, why are you new? Like, and working with your teams to create that laughter, I think is vital and important. And, you know, Bishop, you have the luxury of getting to see a lot of spaces. What are some of the best ways of laughter that you've seen in the spaces that you've been able to occupy in the last few years?
Well, it's places where it's not an in-joke, and I think that becomes dangerous, that like, yeah, we're all laughing, but you're new and you don't know what we're talking about. So you know, having joy is not an in-joke, right? And so if people have joy, they bring a lightness, they hold things lightly. I keep on my office a G.K. Chesterton quote, "Angels fly because they take themselves lightly." You know, what we do is serious, but the joy helps us hold it lightly so that the Holy Spirit can move in. And I think that's where, you know, people want to be together. They're excited. They want more people to experience this. And so you walk into the space and you suddenly realize, I had a family that I didn't even know I had before. And you know what? It's the best family reunion I've ever been to. And I think that's... going into spaces like that just adds so much. I mean, it just, you're just swept into this and you want more of it. You hunger for more of it. So those are what I've seen as some of the best places.
I'd agree with that. That's something I've thought a lot about in my career. The comment I get a lot is, gosh, you bring a lot of energy. Partly it's because I, you know, it's a lot of Coca-Cola and Skittles at 8 o'clock in the morning.
You know, the cabinet's really happy. I don't drink coffee. They say you have enough. You have enough.
Right, and you know, that's part of it. But the other part for me, it is so. If I'm not excited about what's going on, if I'm not excited about being there, who else cares, right? Why is anybody else going to be excited? And so I try to approach every room I walk into with excitement and joy, even if I don't want to be there, right? Because it sets, as leaders, it sets the tone. And when we look at discipleship, if we're not setting the tone for that, why is our church going to care? Why is our community right. going to care? Why is anybody going to pour into their journeys in faith if we're not pouring into our own and then pouring into theirs? And it's, yeah, that starting point, so for me, is so, so important. Plus, I also think, you know, a lot of joy and excitement really will cover up a mediocre sermon any day. Get away with a lot more.
That's right. Well, that joy enables the Holy Spirit to do what you can't do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, but I, you know, early as a child, my music minister lived with such joy, and I wanted that. I wanted that. And then I realized it was about his faith, is it how he walked as a disciple of Jesus. And, you know, I've been trying to follow that ever since. Because if my life isn't made lighter, in this walk, why would anybody else want to do it?
Yeah, and I think that's the fun thing. You know, you brought up the issue of the choir, and I remember the times I think I had more fun singing in the choir than I did in a lot of spaces I've occupied in ministry, because they know how to have fun. I mean, and they do. I mean, you have to be. I mean, how else can you sing and not be joyful? I mean, even, you know, I sat in the back with the basses, and there were a few grumbled men back there, but, you know, they were still some of the happiest men that they would cut up and share jokes in the midst of choir. And, you know, those are those experiences I never forget. All the times that I definitely, like in my journey, I think I remember the fun times way more than I do any sermon or any, you know, anything else other than just like those fun times, whether it be, you know, cracking up in the choir, or for our last service of the year after Christmas this year, we did a Christmas trivia day during the worship experience. And we literally had it like The Price is Right, where people would come up and they would go against each other in a trivia question, and they would get a prize. But everybody got a prize. You got a sticker, or you got, we went to Five Below, and there were these random Five Below gifts. And we had fun. Like, people were just so overjoyed with that experience, because we were intentional about being lighthearted, but also just like, we're here to have fun. And that's something I try to do, try to create a space where people can feel like, you know, it's not so stuffy. The times that I feel that way are maybe because the situation calls for it, whether it's a difficult situation where we need to have that conversation, but I feel like we need to have more fun more than not. And I definitely am one to pick on sports teams. That seems to be an easy way to have fun, especially if they're mediocre sports teams. You can have a lot of fun with that.
Ouch, are you saying something about Denver?
There might be some Bronco things that I didn't say anything last week and they won. So I'm going to hold to that this next week and see and test my theory on that.
I'm glad you went with the Broncos and left my Rockies.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Well, you know, I could say I can sympathize with them being a Cardinals fan, knowing what it's like to be at the bottom this year. It's been a long time since I've had that feeling, but yet I can walk with you all in this journey during this 162 baseball season as we enjoy life together. And I think that stuff carries through. Last night we had this, we had a meeting where we were selecting dinner groups for this new restarting of a new ministry that we kicked off. And we just had it literally was like being at a fantasy football draft. People were just having so much fun and talking about, well, who's this person? And I don't know who this person is. And are they in the directory? Let's see if they have a picture in the directory. And we just had all this fun that like an hour went away, and like nobody realized that we had taken that time. And it was just so fun. And as we looked at the list of groups, like, man, this is going to be a gathering of people when they gather, and it starts with the leadership. All of them are going to be the leaders of these groups, and it came out just one of those things that was just so much fun. And I think we forget that so much in the church, just to have fun.
Well, you know, and when there's that joy and fun and laughter, people anticipate it. Like, they come wanting to anticipate it, and that leaves them open. Then it cracks them open to the God moments that are going to be in the midst of that. And that's why, I mean, if you come thinking you're going to be bored out of your mind, how are you going to stay open to what the Holy Spirit might want to do? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so part of when we talk about discipleship, you know, it's work. It's work. Mm-hmm. It's discipline. But you know, if it's what gives birth to joy in your life, then all of the parts of discipleship bring joy, and it's something you anticipate doing.
Mm-hmm. It is, and one of the things, gosh, yeah, just bringing that joy in and setting the tone, whether it's through kind of doing a fantasy football style draft for a ministry, or you know, truly seeing the cabinet go and ride go-karts or throw axes. And part of me thinks that's
it's
how
a part of our appointment. It's a part of our appointment making. Actually, we
is
did
that
the,
how you get your draft process.
We did the escape room this past week, right. and you know, it was a way to kind of get those muscles back. We failed miserably. I don't know what that says about what appointment season is going to look like.
But it gives me permission as a pastor and a leader of my church and my staff and my people to take a step back and go, oh, we can play, right? Where's the nearest go-kart track? Where's some axes? What can we do here to gather together and play? It's such a important reminder for me. And then to watch y'all go back to work and how that changes the dynamics and in the work and the very, very hard work that a bishop and a cabinet has to do. Because I would imagine you all don't get a lot of joyful phone calls all the time. People aren't calling just to say, hey, it's going well. And so to go and do those things that are joyful helps us do the hard work. And likewise with discipleship, when we find the joy, when we find those moments to laugh and to celebrate, it helps us walk alongside in the tension of grief and hurt and pain, whether in our own lives or with others, wherever we find ourselves.
Right. That joy is the well that we drink from so that we can do the hard things.
Right. Right. And I think I feel like that's something I've lost in kind of my discipleship journey of, just taking myself too seriously. And ignoring that I'm human, just so that I don't have, so I can deal with the hard stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Because it is hard and it's way easier to compartmentalize than to always deal with the heavy things, right. And to separate the tension between joy and grief rather than letting them work together.
Yeah.
Sorry, this live podcast turned into a therapy session. but it does.
Zach, I mean, seems it whenever we talk together.
I need all the help I can get, Bishop.
I'm here for you. I'm here for you.
I believe it. And I don't know. I just discipleship has been an interesting idea, concept, term, goal, especially the last few years. It has just changed. Maybe it hasn't changed. Maybe we're just aware of it a little bit more than we have been.
Well, I don't think we've been doing it.
Right.
Right. I don't think, you know, most people think, okay, I've done Sunday morning. That's it. That's not enough. That's not enough. I mean, discipleship is a daily practices that help us live in the world as the grace-filled people who reflect God's love through Jesus Christ. And we're not doing that really well.
No, Matt and I talk a lot about the third space on the podcast, and where do we, you know, the church used to be the third space, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not anymore, and I don't think it's ever going to be, but we talk a lot about how do we take the church to other people's third spaces? How do we go sit in, you know, senior citizen centers or coffee shops or breweries or name it, right? How do we go be a present there, not to overtake, but to just to be present? How do we join it? I truly believe breweries do third space and discipleship and mission and ministry better than most churches, because 7 days a week they have something going on. There's a pint night, there's live music, there's something, right? To help people, to gather people in community, trivia night, you know, all of the things that the church used to do. Yeah. And now it's breweries and coffee shops, and other people are filling that void because we've stopped doing it. And how do we step back into that space, not to recreate it and take it over, but just to be present and be in? And
how to infuse it with the joy we bring as Jesus disciples, so that people want to know about it. So that, I mean, we just talked about having clergy orders, and it was once again another super spreader. How does our joy that's found in God become contagious in those spaces?
I based on my experience of having done a couple of clergy orders in this conference over the years, and then this one, night and day different. Night and day different.
Yep.
And we've had some really good moments over the years that are really hopeful and thoughtful and encouraging, but there was something different about this year. The intentionality behind all of it and being able, for me, being able to separate myself out of having to lead worship and just being present in worship, which is a really hard switch for me to flip, was so much easier this year because it was surrounded with such joy and laughter and intentionality behind that. It was, I haven't sat in church in a long time when I got to sit in church. It was cool.
Yeah, and we also have a phrase that we've used a couple times on the podcast that we don't put discipleship in the corner. We have it on a couple of mugs and things. And it is something that's important to me. And I think that not being able to craft a space for discipleship to occur in our congregations really hampers what we could do in worship. Go back to that idea of creativity, that if we don't offer those spaces for things to happen, then I really do believe it does translate into worship, because people just come in and expect the things, and you know, it becomes not as inspirational as it could be. But if we took that sense of discipleship happens more outside the walls of the church than inside the walls of the church, you know, taking that to the streets, really, in essence, and saying, like, where in your daily life do you help point people to Jesus, and where are you held accountable to living like Jesus in your daily life, and making it more of a daily thing, and helping them see where it happens in their daily life, then that can translate to people. And I'll never forget in my very first appointment, when I had a third grade teacher who felt so overwhelmed by helping the community that she by herself put together this food drive, and we collected over 2 tons of food in this small town of 700 people. And people asked, why was she doing this? And when she said, because of my faith, then I knew, like, we are doing exactly what we need to be doing. And that was helping them, helping her and others be able to see that their faith is not just a Sunday at a specific time kind of thing. It's something we do all the time. And we can't just put it in the corner and bring it out when we feel comfortable, or when it's Christmas time or Easter, and live it out on a daily basis.
Yeah, no, I think that is so true. One of the things, you know, before clergy order started, I went to church in Greeley, Colorado, and I realized I saw something happen in church that I haven't seen since I left Glide. And that was a chance for personal testimony of where God was showing up in people's lives. There was a time at the start of worship for people to talk about their God moments. And the pastor was really intentional about saying, God is active in your life. And watch this week and come back and tell us next week. And I think that's some of the muscles that we need to really help people strengthen, to be able to see, oh, this is, here's where God is in my life right now. Or I could have only have gotten through this with God's strength. And so how do we recapture that in our worship spaces?
Yeah, you know, it goes back to the age-old Wesley question, right? Where do we see God at work? And you know, that, and how is it with your soul? We ask every now and then, but maybe Wesley was on to something by asking it all the time, all the stinking time. And I think about that. We've danced around it a little bit, and we've certainly talked about discipleship as we see it as leaders. And as we look just at our area here in the Mountain Sky, we are, in Montana especially, we're circuit riders. We're pastors serving multiple churches and long distances, and weather's an issue. You know, there's a lot. And how, at some rate, we're gonna have to recapture what it was to be a circuit rider, and how to empower and equip our churches and our leaders, our lay people, just our communities in discipleship, because we're not going to be there all the time. And we're going to have that leadership again. We're going to have that intentionality. And so I wonder, I just wonder what that looks like as we move into that reality.
No, the Methodist movement was at its strongest, I think, when we didn't have residential clergy. right? When we had circuit riders, what was their purpose? It was to train leaders, ensure that discipleship making was happening, and provide the sacraments. Well, imagine if that's what every clergy went back to. Right. Imagine what would happen in our churches if we reclaimed lay leadership and the commitment to grow as disciples and to study together, to be in small group together, and to have the clergy do the undergirding work of the sacramental life of the church and training up. Imagine how much more vibrant we'd be.
I really just mentioned that so that I can talk about Brother Van.
That was a good segue. That was a good segue. For those of you who are listening, very, very Montana United Methodist.
You're welcome. I won't see harvest time, although I want to.
I think you should tag it on at the end of the podcast.
We absolutely should. It's my favorite.
It's amazing song.
But so when I served my first appointment in this conference up in northern Montana, there were people in my church who still had direct connection with Brother Van, who was our big Montana circuit rider from the late 1800s.
But talk about what he did. He got off the boat.
I read the Brother Van book. One of my church members gave me, let me borrow. She did not give it to me. She let me borrow it. But a copy that had her grandmother's handwriting in it of this is the experience we had with Brother Van. Just, she went through and annotated it and was like, we were there. He stayed at our house when he would come into town. And that was such a powerful moment for me. One, to make that connection of I'm serving these churches that a circuit rider not so long ago started. And there's still that history and still that connection. And the people of this church are leading in still in such a way that he left that legacy. He raised the people up in such a way in their discipleship that their great grandkids are now leading the church, and I get to show up and guide it rather than try to move it, right? Like it was the discipleship model that we're talking about, and that's a rare gift, I think.
Well, and for me, we have such, legend larger than life, but here's someone who got off in the middle of nowhere and looked around and said, we got to do some God things here and big God things. And so planted churches, planted a children's home, planted hospitals and clinics and schools. And my God, what are we doing for the sake of the gospel and for future generations? How come we are not dreaming those God-sized dreams anymore? Mm-hmm. And instead, we have churches that are becoming museums.
Right. Right. It's hard. And being a person that loves rural ministry and loves serving in rural ministry, the vitality of our rural congregations and our rural communities is massive. And in so many places across our connection, they're the only faith and spiritual place. I didn't want to say institution, but just center of their neighborhoods, and show up in the moments they need to show up in, which is often overlooked because of metrics and all of the other things that we overshadow their vitality with.
Well, and what makes me so committed to our rural church, when I did my tour and continue to do my travel through our 430,000 square miles of a conference, and I see our United Methodist presence in a tiny hamlet, and we are the only grace-filled witness of the gospel. Right. I mean, what else is there is not grace-filled? And I never want to shut a small church because, where two or three are gathered, Jesus is there, and you don't know what can happen. So how to unleash that witness so that people will know there's a place they can go, that they're going to be welcomed as they are. They're going to be loved as they are. And together they can find themselves transformed by God's love.
Yeah. And discipleship is such a key piece to that. Because without that, yeah, there's no reason.
Right.
Right. And as pastors, as leaders, and as folks who spend a lot of time doing that, it's so important, at least for me, to remember discipleship in the church is not about me. It's about raising up those who are, and we're in it together. And I just recently preached on the body of Christ and you know, reminded my congregation, it takes us all. You know, yeah. We're all hands, feet, elbows. Somebody has to have the unfortunate, you know, job to be the rear end. We need those. We need all of the pieces, or else we don't function. We don't move forward. We don't share God's love and grace for all people anywhere, much less inside the church.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's the challenge is to do the work, because it's hard. It's not easy work. I think, and I've heard this phrase a lot lately, and I definitely, because I probably say it all the time, but I have heard it from other people too, is I would much rather throw things up against the wall and see what sticks than not throw anything at all. And I think far too often our churches are too afraid to even throw something up against the wall, because they're afraid of what may happen or what the community may say about them, or, you know, are we going to lose people because we're trying to do something different? Or, you know, being able to at least try, I think, is one of the key steps in a sense of trying to make disciples, is that you have to do it. You can't just sit back and say, you know, I've got this beautiful building and beautiful space and people are just going to show up and Jesus is going to happen. And while that may happen for a very small group of people, it's quite obvious we're missing the boat on so many more people. You know, I went to an Air Force football game on last Saturday. There were more people there than were probably in church in Castle Rock on Sunday. I guarantee it. And, you know, what are some ways, you know, I think dreaming with your team, like what are some ways that we can create spaces inside and outside of the church where people can feel that connection and feel like they are growing in their faith and not just showing up.
And when you have a community that are committed to discipleship and growing themselves spiritually, you can throw a lot of stuff up because they're not going to be afraid of it. Because one of those things, the Holy Spirit might work through. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jesus even told his disciples, if you know, it's not working out in the town you're on, shake the dust off and keep moving. Right. And so, but I think when we have that depth of spirituality, we can take risks together, knowing that even in a failure, God's going to help us grow. And it's only by trying that we might find a new way of being together and a new way of sharing God's love.
And maybe that's why we've suffered so much and lost so much of just doing discipleship, is we have forgotten the dust off your feet and move on to the next space. And we have held on to what has worked, what maybe doesn't work anymore, or what maybe never worked to begin with, and forgot that discipleship can be seasonal. The ways in which God speaks to us and the Holy Spirit guides us, it can be different from season to season of life. In the four seasons we have in Montana, God speaks to me differently in the winter than in the summer, right? I find God different spaces at different times of the year. And for me, I have to remember to be open to that. Yeah. Throwing something up against the wall to see if it sticks, we don't do that well anymore. No. We very much got stuck in the, we've always done it this way. In the, gosh, we tried that 50 years ago and it didn't work then, it's not going to work now. Well, maybe it will. We live in a different world. Life is different and maybe.
Well, and not working out might be God's not yet, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's where we have to like stay so open. Mm-hmm.
We do. And what's, you know, what's the harm in trying? If you don't try, you won't know, right? And I think, I don't know. I just think discipleship, maybe we approach it with a lot of fear or apathy or both. And just the, I really don't want to be hurt again. Or I don't want to be let down, or, you know.
Well, for go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Bishop.
No, go ahead, please. No, well, please, no, you.
It's that fear of failure. We see failure as such a negative thing in the church, which actually in the business world, if you look in the entrepreneurial business world, failure is part of it. Right. Like you all have to fail. And I think we have forgotten how to create space for failure to occur, to celebrate the successes, right, mourn what didn't work, say, hey, this didn't work. We're going to move on. And that's okay. Like, it's okay that it didn't work. We're going to do something different. But this actually led to us doing this and making those connections. I very rarely have seen that in churches where they're like, yes, we failed. Yay, we're doing this new thing. And I'll never forget the first time. I've done it once. We had a women's group in my first church that met, and it failed. It just bombed. After four or five gatherings, it bombed. And so after we decided to disband the group and it then led to something else, I celebrated that. I said, let's celebrate this ministry. Let's celebrate the leadership that was willing to pour into this. Let's celebrate all these things, the good things that you guys did. And let's not worry about the bad things, but we're going to move on. This led to us doing this great ministry, this other next great ministry. And I've tried to find ways to do that. But man, if we talk about failure in the church, it's like talking about a scab that we don't want to talk about.
But you know why? Because of our ego and our our control, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we clergy are too often, we allow ourselves to be led by our ego. And I learned some hard lessons, and I no longer I don't want to be ego driven, but I want to be spirit led. And that gives me permission to fail, because either I'm listening to the spirit closely enough or I'm not. But also our control, to have empowered disciples, to have empowered lay people, means that we get to just lift people up. We don't get to control what they do. And I think we need to let go of our ego and control if we're really going to have empowered disciples in our churches.
I think you're spot on, Bishop. It's so true. No matter what size church or community you serve, if we make it all about us and we drive the ministry all about the pastor and the leadership, when we move in an itinerant system, when we move, it dies, right? Rarely does that stuff continue on. And we can't, you know, that's a detriment to ourselves, you know, to the leadership of the church that we're leaving, in the community that we're leaving, because we've not created disciples. We've created
a cult. Follow me.
Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, to me, the gift of itineracy is if it's going to be successful, it can't be about me.
Right.
But what it is whatever it is that I'm holding, that I pass it off to the next person who's going to have different gifts, is going to shape it as they do with the community. But I'm always aware I'm passing this on.
I told somebody just yesterday, every church I've ever been appointed to, I've walked in knowing I'm going to walk out, that I will be moved. I will be reappointed at some point in time, whether that's next year or, you know, 20 years from now. It's going to happen. I won't be here forever, but you may be. Yeah. And so how do we make room for that? How do we make room for each other? And then how do we make room for the new person, the people coming in that then carry on the legacy that we've cultivated in our time together? They pick that up and run with it and cultivate their legacy and on. Well, Bishop, I'll do this all day long.
This is fun.
But we want to be good stewards of your time and energy, as well as our hosts here with UmCom. And do you have any final parting words and wisdom for us?
Thank you for asking the questions, and thanks for the joy and laughter we shared today. And I hope it multiplies. I hope it multiplies. And me thank too. You. You have a powerful ministry in your podcast. I always appreciate when you've invited me on, and even the times you haven't invited me on.
Well, all three of our listeners appreciate it.
She's also inching into getting in Matt Rawl territory of getting a sequins jacket. That's what we joke about. The fifth time is a sequins jacket when we get money to be able to purchase those.
That's right.
So
Saturday Night Live has their jacket. The PGA has their green jacket. We're going with sequins jackets.
All right. That'll work. Thank you both.
Thank you, Bishop. So for our listeners, we want to encourage you to go to our website at beardedtheologians.com, where we've got a lot of great content, a lot of great past content where you can connect with us. And we definitely talk about discipleship a lot on this podcast. It's probably one of our top topics. If we actually looked at our topics to see what we actually talk about, probably is discipleship more than anything. And we share that with you all and enjoy this time that we get to do this. And so go to our website at beardedtheologians.com and you can find all sorts of great stuff along with picking up a few items. We know that this is Pastor Appreciation Month. And so you could buy some Bearded Theologians gear to give to your pastor. Even if they don't have a beard, they can still wear a Bearded Theologian shirt. It's not a requirement. One of the great things we're doing for the month of Pastor Appreciation is if you order through our Teespring site, you can get free shipping by putting in the promo code BEARDCAST. That's BEARDCAST. And that will give you free shipping on your items. And so we thank you. We thank MCOM for our time together. And so for the Bearded Theologians, I'm Matt Franks.
I'm Zach Bechtold. Thanks for checking us out.
I want you to subscribe and like this video. And push that thumbs up.
Thank you for listening to the Bearded Theologians podcast. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share on all social media outlets. You can check out old episodes and more information at beardedtheologians.com. Thanks for checking us out.